Welcome to Couch Sessions by YWAM Heidebeek. On this podcast, we sit down with YWAMers to have interesting and challenging conversations on their journey with Holy Spirit and how they live their day-to-day lives with God. So come, join us. This episode is hosted by Stephen Browning.
Okay, so I have the opportunity today and a great privilege to be able to talk with Jeff Fountain, a former national leader and former European leader of YWAM. He's been in YWAM already for many years and has done many different things within YWAM. It's such a privilege to have you, Jeff.
Thank you.
So I would like to start from the beginning. How did you find out about YWAM?
Well, January 1967, I think was the first time Lauren Cunningham came to New Zealand. And he was invited by the leader of the Great Barrier Christian Fellowship in Karaka Bay, Arama. And my family, I'd gone with my family there, my parents and siblings, since 1964, Christmas 64, which was really where I first encountered the work of the Holy Spirit, was filled with the Spirit. And so this was a few years later. This American came to speak. I remember, and we would sit in an old marquee that was repaired so many times, and it would only take maybe, you know, less than 100 people. And we were sitting on benches without any back, and I remember sitting behind this big guy, seeing this big back. He was in a kind of a mohair type jersey, khaki color, and I wondered who this guy was. And then he was introduced as Lauren Cunningham. So he got up and started talking about, you know, vision for young people to go out in missions. And he said the name of his organization several times, and I couldn't catch it. So when he sat down, I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, could you say the name of your organization again? You know, Youth with a Mission. It just was not a household name at all. I thought it was a strange name. Actually, kind of a long name for a mission organization. Okay. Now, he was actually speaking to a lot of young people there who had, you know, fairly recently really been filled with the Spirit and wanted to be used of God. So this was actually the very fertile seed into which Lauren dropped, or soil into which Lauren dropped the seed for mission vision. And there were the first YWAMers in Holland were people whom he met there. People like Ross Tooley and Barry Austin, Riona Peterson, who later became Riona Jolie, is not so well known amongst today's YWAMers, but she was a legend here in Europe, still alive in England. Her book called Tomorrow You Die was about her going to Albania and being imprisoned there in the old communist times. Bruce and Barbara Thompson, at that stage, they had no relationship with each other, but they were also in these first days at Great Barrier. Barry Austin, who became the father of the DTS in England, actually for many, many years, he nurtured the whole generation of leadership of DTSs in England. And there were others that I think the Dawsons might have been there, Jim and Joy Dawson. John probably was there, but he would have been out fishing in those days. He wasn't spiritually interested. So that was my first encounter. And then Lauren actually stayed in our home once or twice. And I remember going with my brother. He was making a film on an old 16 millimeter camera, a movie camera. So he wanted my brother and I to dress up with a white shirt and tie. And we went as if we were knocking on doors, but we were not actually. It was actually up by the Auckland War Museum. There was a house there. He wanted to get the palm trees and us going in there. He was making this one of the first films about YWAM, actually, long before video came along. And so that was my first encounter. And my thought was, yeah, this is really only for spiritual people. You know, people like Riona Peterson or Barry Austin. And however, we had our first, what we called in those days, a domestic crusade. We use that terrible word, you know. And in Ponsonby. And there was a young Tongan who I was at school with. It was his last year at school, came from Tonga, that we went door to door with. He was just full of the Lord. His name was Kalafi Mowala. Now, you read about him, actually, and is that really you, God? And Lauren tells his story. So Kalafi and I went on door to door, and if you knew Calafi, you wouldn't believe what I was going to say now. And that was, he was very shy. So every second door, I decided I'd knock on the door and step back and push him forward. So then there were outreaches going up to Fiji and mm-hmm. later to Indonesia. My brother actually went on those. Ross Tooley was the leader, and Ross later became the founder of the pioneer for YWAM in the Philippines. Right. And then they actually set up Youth with a Mission legally. Already there was a framework for teen missions, a legal framework, and we actually had a coffee bar downtown in buildings that are long, streets that have long disappeared with the downtown development there in Auckland. And my father actually was asked to become the chairperson of Youth with a Mission, which took over the legal board of Teen Challenge. And so, yeah, there was a lot of involvement. In fact, over the years, the very first time we tried to buy a ship, which was the Maori, the inter-island ferry in New Zealand, every New Zealander knew the Maori, it was to our place that the two guys from America, Wally Wenji and somebody else, they were sent by Lauren to come and negotiate with the New Zealand Steamship Company for the ship. And at that stage, now we're not talking about 1972, because I was working as a journalist on the New Zealand Herald at the time. And here they were sitting in our lounge with all these already printed brochures of the Maori looking like a new ship. I forget what name was being suggested at that time. And, you know, here was an amazing story that as a journalist, but I was sworn to secrecy. Nothing was to be said about this. So, yeah, we were very much involved seeing the development of YWAM in the very early days there in New Zealand. I went on an outreach in early 1974, I think it was, at Mount. We had one of our first kind of beach outreaches there. I think Bernie Ogilvie might have been the New Zealand director at that time. Mm-hmm. And but to tell you the truth, by this time, I wasn't too excited about getting involved with YWAM. At university, I had really had my faith challenged, and I didn't know how to relate my study with my faith. My faith had been a very real, personal, experientially based, but I didn't know how to use my mind and engage with the study I was doing on history. And the more I read about history, the more terrible things, you know, you learned about as to what was done in the name of Christianity. So I had developed, and then eventually I was greatly encouraged coming across books by Francis Schaeffer, who was a new name on the scene at the time, but showing that you didn't have to turn your brain off to be a Christian.
Yeah.
And so what I was becoming interested in was a holistic understanding of the gospel. Mm. And I tended to see YWAM in those days as a Bible-bashing outfit trying to get, you know, scalps and saving souls, but not looking at a bigger picture, you see. So I thought, well, it's wonderful, you know, the enthusiasm that's there, but that's not really for me. And so, yeah, I was very well aware of the beginning days mm-hmm. of Youth with a Mission. I remember asking Lauren some years later, how many people actually were involved in YWAM when you first came to New Zealand? I think he might have said about 20, you know, staff. I don't know. But you could have probably had a world staff conference in a telephone booth. Do you know what a telephone booth is, by the way?
I'm young, but I'm not that young.
and so, anyway, I found myself actually going as I said, I worked on a newspaper, and then I became a traveling secretary for InterVarsity Fellowship or mm-hmm. Tertiary Students Christian Fellowship in New Zealand for student Christians at university.
Yeah.
And that led, making a long story short, to me going to live in Canada with some musicians that had come to New Zealand. I'd set up their tour with the student organization. And so we were based in Toronto, and then we had a company of singers, dancers, and musicians, about 60 people that we'd recruited for a summer tour here in Europe. And we did a cathedral tour in England, and then we came across to Holland, and we did concerts in places like the Westerkerk in Amsterdam, where Rembrandt is buried, Laurenskerk in Rotterdam, other churches around the place, the Vondelpark. People had never seen dance as an expression of worship. In fact, they didn't quite, they were a bit embarrassed about it. They didn't quite know what to do. They heard there were dancers, you know. And it was on that trip that when I came to Amsterdam, I met with Floyd McClung, who had taken over from the beginning of YWAM here in Holland. He had actually started a ministry called Dilaram, which was holistic, and it was amongst world travelers and hippies and so on the drug trail out in the east. And they started a magazine called Insight Magazine. And that was more holistic, and it was taking talking about the relevance of the gospel to different areas of life. Now, that very much attracted me. And so after we had met in Amsterdam, he came to one of our concerts there. I went back to Canada after this tour, and I then received a letter from Floyd, and it just came at the time, just after a weekend, I'd been on a conference where I felt three strong impressions. I should return to Europe, I should return to journalism, and I should live in a community. And then I got this letter from Floyd. Would you pray about coming to edit a magazine we've started called Insight Magazine? Well, and we have just purchased a property out in the countryside, and that's where you would be based, called Heidebeek. Well, here it was, living in a community, returning to Europe and returning to journalism.
Wow.
And that was my next step. So I arrived here in 1975. And just in time for us all to go across back to England for one of the first European YWAM conferences in a place called Chichester. And that's where Lauren, for the very first time, came and said, I've just been on this retreat in the mountains of Colorado, and this is, I felt the Lord gave me understanding about these areas, these mind molders, these classrooms of society through which we can disciple nations. And that was the beginning of his message on the seven mind molders, or seven spheres.
Yeah.
Actually, I still got my original notes that I had on my reporter's notebook. And from my memory, he only talked about six at that time. But we've got different, Lauren has a different memory from me as to what actually took place then. In those days, he left economics out. And I remember somebody else saying, well, I reckon business should be in there somewhere. So anyway, when I heard him say this, I thought, oh, this is interesting. This sounds like a simple version of what, Schaefer's talked about. Mm. And actually, by that time, I'd become very interested in Abraham Kuyper, who had been the Prime Minister of Holland 120 years ago. He just died last November, 100 years ago. And before I left New Zealand, somebody told me about this guy, Kuyper, and I began to study about him and read about him. And I thought, wow, why haven't we heard about this before? Well, the reason is he came out of the Reformed worldview, which is not very strong in New Zealand. We have more Anglo influence there. And my background is Baptist. And outside of personal discipleship and church and evangelism and missions, we didn't talk about what the meaning of the gospel was for these other areas of life. And so having heard Lauren speak about this, and I thought, oh, maybe there is room for me in YWAM after all. So I was encouraged by that. I thought, well, this is our starting point. Maybe there is room. Plus, I was coming to edit this magazine that really had a broad mandate to explore the implications of the gospel in these other areas. So that's how I found myself coming into this property for the first time. In fact, I remember driving in here for the first time and seeing on the sign out on the road, it said, Heidebeek, YWAM Dilaram. And I remember saying out loud, why did they have to put YWAM on the sign? I thought I was joining Dilaram. But what I was discovering was that Dilaram by now had been brought actually back under the umbrella of Youth with a Mission. And I wasn't 100% happy with that. And I discovered there were a lot of Dilaramas that were not happy about that either, because within a year after that, we actually had a big blow up and a lot of people left. And it was the worst chapter of Heidebeek's history ever was in that first year or two. But I began to see that, actually, Dilaram needed YWAM and YWAM needed Dilaram. And we need each other.
Yeah, because that holistic mindset, this word keeps on reverberating in my head. I heard it a couple of months ago and it's just kept on staying in my brain, that holistic mindset of Christianity. So often we will look at either just the spiritual or just the theoretical or just the emotional, but not look at it as a unity. And it's such an important thing because, like, as you said, logical thinkers, the way YWAM used to run with just the spiritual side didn't work for them because it just caused annoyance and frustration. And it's such an interesting idea that it still clashes to this day. There's people who still clash with that side within Christian culture constantly. And it's such a touchy subject in a way.
Well, it has to do with our understanding of mission.
Mm-hmm.
What is the gospel all about?
Yeah.
And here's what's very interesting. If you ask a lot of people, okay, what's the essence of the gospel? Well, that Jesus died for our sins, rose again, he's coming back. All of which is true. But 3 years before Jesus died on the cross, we read in Matthew 4, he went around preaching the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
What gospel was that before he went to the cross? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the gospel of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And when we reduce the gospel of the kingdom just to the gospel of salvation, getting a ticket to heaven, we're shrinking the gospel.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you ever remember a film called Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Well, honey, we shrunk the gospel. And this... we've got to realize the gospel doesn't start with Matthew 28. It starts with Genesis 1.
Yeah.
God's purposes for his creation, which got thwarted, and he's restoring that. And every area of life that's been touched by sin, which is every area of life,
mm-hmm.
God intends to see redeemed and transformed. Yeah. And that's every area of life. But we have shrunken it. And so I'm glad to know that fairly early on in YWAM's history, there was this expansion.
Yeah.
Now, whether we've gone far enough is another question.
Yeah. That's still up for debate, I think, right? You went from joining as a journalist, being able to edit for that magazine. How did it then happen that you stepped into national leadership and then European leadership? Because it seems, in my brain, it seems like a huge jump.
Well, okay. Actually, I told you about the big blow up that we had here.
Yes.
And by that time, Romke and I were married. And I should say, coming back from England, I was sitting in front of two YWAM girls who were chatting the whole journey. And one of them was telling the other how she'd spent this last year in America and working with YWAM there. She was Dutch. And she was so excited about it all. And I remember at some stage thinking, oh, you know, yak, 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 yak. I wish that girl would shut up. Well, she's the one I'm married to, actually. and we got to know each other in the following few months. And long story short, we got married the following September. So almost exactly a year after I first arrived here. And Romke was the person who actually started YWAM here in Holland in 1973. And in between, she'd gone to America. That's when Floyd McClung came and took over the leadership here. Mm. Of the Ark, and which was a houseboat that Romke had bought with others, and it was placed behind the railway station there for more than 20 years, although they only got permission to begin with for 3 months. And so Romke and I were actually in New Zealand after we got married when this whole blow-up happened, which is probably a good thing because I'm not quite sure whether I would have stayed. However, we came back to a whole different situation. We had to face the question, do we stay or do we leave?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I felt like, okay, I don't understand everything, but I need to stay here right now. And that's where I saw that Dilaram needed YWAM and vice versa. Now, 3 years later, Floyd, who was leading the community at that time, felt he should go into Amsterdam and where he had been before. And ask Romke and me to take over the leadership here on the base.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we were doing. And we were, we started having all sorts of outreaches from Heiderbeek. In each year, we would have reporting events when we'd come back from all of our summer outreaches. And we started on Hemelfahrt, an open day, because that was the day that Jesus gave the Great Commission. So let's talk about missions on this day. And those were wonderful years. We really look back on those times and the harmony that we had with the leadership team there. Some of our best friends still, came out of those that leadership team in the 80s. And we did a lot of, it was a time too where we made a lot of worship recordings, and we had concerts for the king throughout the country. We went on tours through all the provincial capitals, and we had concerts for the king and music for the king series of well, they became CDs, but they started off as cassettes. And do you know what a cassette is? And LPs. And those were very rich days. And we made the recordings over in the Sierenhof. And then we got a request from England, from a recording company, to say, well, we've heard your recording. The only word we understand is hallelujah. but we like the mix you've got between a studio sound and a live sound. Would you make that same recording for us in English? Mm. So that's what we did. And then the next step was they asked us, they said, well, we have this singer here who's written lots of songs and he wants to do congregational recording and he's got all the music tracks done. Can we use Hayder Bake as the choir? So he came across with all these recordings. Do you know the name of Graham Kendrick? He was the main leading songwriter in Britain, let's say 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, I wasn't alive.
No, that's right. So that's why I asked. those were wonderful days. And then at the end of the 80s, 88, Lynn Green, who was the leader for YWAM, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, he asked me to consider taking on the leadership for Europe. They'd break up Europe into and make its own region out of it, and then Middle East and Africa would be three different regions. Mm-hmm. So I prayed about it and considered it, and I came back to him. I said, I'll do it on one condition, that you solve all the major problems in Europe first. Well, in 1989, what year were you born?
98.
Okay, 98. So this is long before you came along. All sorts of amazing things started happening in Europe. The barbed wire got cut through between Austria and Hungary. The Berlin Wall came down before the end of that year. And by the end of the year, Ceausescu, who was the feared tyrant and dictator of Romania, was dead and buried. And so I was just amazed. So I wrote to Lynn and I said, wow, I'm really deeply impressed. You kept your side of the bargain. I'll have to keep mine. and so it was a wonderful privilege to step into that role in 1990, at the beginning of 1990, when suddenly we had a new open Europe. Wow. And it was a gold rush time. All sorts of groups went in. There was all sorts of proclamations. And according to the newsletters that came out, you know, Eastern Europe was saved six times over the number of responses. it was wild and disorganized and shallow, a lot of it. And so I started meeting with leaders from other organizations, OM, Campus Crusade, Youth for Christ, Greater Europe Mission, IVF, and we formed a group that eventually designed a network for cooperation across Europe called Hope for Europe, out of which came about 20 different networks. And we held a couple of large congresses in Budapest and Hungary, which was kind of central for Europe, and which we organized from actually out of our offices here at Hayder Bake. We had 1,000 people come to that first one and all sorts of networks. And you see, what we were facing was a kind of a, in the evangelical world, we don't think Europe. We don't even think very much about our own country. So we think local church. Catholics think the whole of Europe. And Protestant churches, mainstream ones, tend to think of their own nation. And so somebody said, Catholics see woods, Protestants see trees, and I say evangelicals see branches. We've got to see the bigger picture. And Hope for Europe was an attempt to create a framework of cooperation towards a common goal, working together, not competing with each other, but working together. I mean, some were anti-charismatic or anti-Catholic, or some were for church planting and others were not. In those days, church planting was a bit of a swear word because, you know, it's hard to believe, but it was hard. But churches felt very threatened with the idea of church planting, that they would become, you know, rivals. And but we began to realize that what we had in common was far greater than what separated us. So through the 90s then, actually, for a while I was still doing the Hayder Bake and the national role, but we passed those on eventually, and my main focus became Europe-based. And after 20 years of that, so the end of 2009, my 60th birthday was coming up, so I thought, well, hang on a minute, this is supposed to be youth with a mission. I need to get out of the way. I was only 40 when I took it over. And so I stepped back from that role, and that meant I was no longer involved in any global YWAM leadership meetings and so forth. But I felt all this networking I'd been involved in, I had built up many, many contacts and wanted to somehow continue for however many years the Lord will still give me, working at a European level.
Mm.
So that's when we set up a Center for European Studies, which we call the Schumann Center. Yeah. Now, that's another whole story, because in 1991, fairly early in, and my role as the European leader, I took our leadership team to Brussels. This was before the big year of 1992, which is when the European community became the European Union, where we brought in the euro, and there were it was a big step forward for the whole European integration project. So we went down to Brussels to ask, well, what's this all about? You know, what should our attitude be? Because I started looking around, about from 1990 onwards, where are the mothers and fathers with God's heart for Europe? And I was staggered to discover two things. The first thing was, evangelicals didn't even think about Europe, with one or two wonderful exceptions. We just didn't go there. We didn't know how to think about it. The second surprise was, the biblical perspectives I came across came from Catholics. And I had not expected that. So here we were talking to this official of the EU in Brussels, in one of the big buildings there. The first thing he said to us was, well, shall we begin with prayer? Well, we thought we were kind of, you know, this is the heart of the beast. And then he began to tell this amazing story about how the whole thing began, particularly with this very godly French politician called Robert Schuman. He was a French foreign minister. He actually had been for a while the French prime minister after the war. And how that he saw the need for forgiveness and reconciliation between the French and the Germans in the first place, and that that was the key to Europe being rebuilt. Now, we tend to forget how terrible the situation was in Europe after the war. We think, well, you know, the soldiers came through, gave out chocolates and cigarettes and kisses, and went home, and everybody lived happily ever after. There's a book called Year Zero, written about 1945, because the old world had been destroyed, the new had not yet been built. This was Year Zero. And it was a terrible time of despair, of bitterness, of brokenness, of hopelessness, of fear, fear of Joseph Stalin and his plans. And that's why many Dutch people went to New Zealand, actually, shortly after that. And you know, if it was bad for Holland, it was worse for Germany. And all across Europe, actually, it was just, it was a terrible time. But how did Europe get rebuilt? And it started with this message of forgiveness and reconciliation. Right. And Robert Schuman was right at the core of that, along with people like Konrad Adenauer, who was the Chancellor of Western Germany, and Alcide De Gasperi, who was the Italian Prime Minister. And all three of these men were devout believers. And they'd been influenced by Catholic social thinking that said, every human being is significant and has value because they're made in God's image.
Yeah.
And because God is our creator, we are one human family. So we must have solidarity. And we also must have seek the common good of all. Now, out of this came some of the first concepts of the European Union as a community of peoples deeply rooted in Christian values. And I was listening to this guy there in Brussels, and I thought, wow, I've never heard that story. I heard stories of a conspiracy. This was the Antichrist. This was, you know, a Catholic conspiracy.
Yeah.
This is totally different. So I asked him if he would help me put on a consultation the next year with evangelical leaders. And so we got some very key people from the European Parliament. One of them was the vice president, who was a strong evangelical believer. His father-in-law actually was Martin Lloyd-Jones, who was a great, you know, we can call him puritanical preacher in England. And this man, his name was Sir Fred Catherwood. He became a real mentor for me in his writings and speaking, and sometimes he was involved in events that we put on. Now, ever since then, we've been holding all sorts of activities. Some of them were called the New Europe Forum, others the State of Europe Forum, in all sorts of places across Europe. Actually, since the last 10 years, we've been trying to hold them every year in the capital of the country that had the presidency of the EU. Last year was supposed to be Zagreb, but because of corona, we couldn't have it.
Yeah.
The year before was in Bucharest. So we did have it in Bucharest there. And we started off in the palace of the Orthodox Patriarch. And the next day we were in the People's Palace, the Parliament, you know.
Wow.
And so we've been in all sorts of significant places, bringing Christians together from Pentecostal to Orthodox and everybody in between, all sorts of disciplines to look at Europe and what kind of Europe would God want, and what's the task of the church in helping, or what's the task of Christians in society in building all of these.
Wow.
So this has been my passion. Because I realize we've got lots of blind spots as evangelicals.
Yeah.
We don't know really how to think public square biblically.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Whoa. That's such a... I think we could talk about this. I think this is so much on your heart and so much your passion. I think we could talk about this one subject for hours.
Yes.
I just sense it all over you. So now you guys have decided to move to Amsterdam. A couple of years ago, you moved to Amsterdam.
We didn't decide. God picked us up by the scruff of our neck. And we discovered, you know, really from the one day to the other, we realized, I don't know, just the story very briefly. Somebody was talking to Romke about starting a home for unwed mothers. And then Romke said, well, what about this place, our house, which is down the road from here? And just spontaneously like that. And then when I came home, she said, well, you know, I just gave away our house. It wasn't our house. It belonged to YWAM, but we'd been living there for 29 years, I think. Anyway, since 1979. And this was 3 years ago, so you can do the math. So we thought, well, yeah, we can move out into the town. But then we began to wonder, well, okay, if we don't have responsibility anymore here, what keeps us here? Our family was elsewhere in the country. And I had to make so many trips to Schiphol and, you know, traveling all this way. So we started to realize that God was moving us on. Mm. And long story short, we were invited by the leadership in Amsterdam to take over some space in Prince Hendrik Carter 50 and set up the Schumann Center there and live there. And that's what we've been doing for over 3 years now.
Wow.
We've never had a moment of regret in doing it. It was just very much the right move at the right time. And from there, we continue with this this task within the Schumann Center primarily. What we do is three things. We're trying to jog people's memories. That's about the history.
Yeah.
The past. We're trying to challenge people's consciences or stir people's conscience about the present. And we're trying to awaken people's imagination about the future.
Wow.
What is the future of Europe as far as God would want?
Mm.
Why are we so negative about the future of Europe? Why do we buy into this unbelief as if it's not God's will for God's will to be done in Europe? When we pray the Lord's Prayer, we are to pray, may your kingdom come, may your will be done in Europe as it is in heaven, or on earth as it is in heaven. But that's what it means, in Europe as it is in heaven.
Yeah.
So why do we assume that God wants things to get worse and worse? As if God really doesn't want his will to be done. Well, that just doesn't make any logical sense at all.
Yeah.
So we're trying to challenge the negative perspective and find out why do we have such a negative perspective. And one of the reasons is there's been a strong teaching of dispensationalism and an eschatology that's been popularized by people like Hal Lindsey and Tim LaHaye and so forth, that is negative about Europe. It assumes things that are not in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It reads into the Bible.
Yeah.
And this has created a cloud of unbelief amongst generations of Christians. And we're trying to dispel that cloud say, look what God has done in the past. Now, you don't have to be a believer to recognize that it is the story of Jesus that's the single greatest factor in shaping Europe's past.
Mm.
Now, why shouldn't it be the single greatest factor in shaping Europe's future?
Mm.
Even an atheist like Richard Dawkins says, you can't understand European history without understanding Christianity and the Bible. Now, I'm sure he means that in a negative way, but it's also in a positive way. There's an English writer who doesn't confess to be a believer. He says, I wish I could be one, is Tom Holland. And a few years ago, he wrote an article in the New Statesman saying why I was wrong about Christianity. And what he has discovered is that Christianity has been the shaping force for good all the way through history.
Mm-hmm.
And concepts that we say, oh, these came out of the Enlightenment, brotherhood and equality and liberty and so on. No, he says, they were shaped much, much earlier. And Europe would never have become Europe without basic Christian and biblical understanding of the image of God in every human being, moral equality before God, and also of the concept of love, because the concept of love, love your neighbor as yourself, and not just the man or the woman next door, but the next country, Germany, you know, for the French or for the Dutch, that was very hard to do. But this was a gospel imperative to love your neighbor and forgive, you see. Yeah. So this has been the power of renewing Europe since the Second World War, but it's not recognized now. So most people think the EU is just an economic and political platform. But Schuman said from the start, this must have a soul. We need to have spiritual development along with material development. But because we're blind to that, you know, we're missing the central element.
Yeah.
Now, we cannot expect politicians to provide that. That's the task of faith communities.
Yeah.
And when the evangelicals stand on the sideline, just point and criticize and so on, we are not being constructive at all.
Uh-huh.
We're being irresponsible. And that's why we're trying to stir up God's people to recognize we have a task to bring the gospel into the public square.
Mm.
And this is what we're trying to do through all sorts of programs and writings. And we have a master's degree program that recognized by a university in England. And we're trying to equip people to engage with the issues out there in the public square.
Wow. Okay, I think this is all we have for today. But I would like to ask you one last question. For young YOMers or young leaders in YOM like me, like the guy who brought you coffee, what would be the one nugget of advice you would give us in our journey in YOM?
Seek God's kingdom first.
Hmm.
We've often sought the church first.
Yeah.
Now, Jesus said, I'll build my church. You seek the kingdom.
Mm.
And we could do the same with YWAM. We can make YWAM the center instead of the kingdom center. So, seek God's kingdom first. And all these things will be added unto you. And he says that in the context of saying, take no thought for your future, for your money, etc., your clothes. My last salary was, when I left university, I started working for the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And that was at a level of a salary that I'd said to a friend, I'm not going to accept any job less than, you know, a certain level. Well, this is about half the level. Well, okay, it's a good experience. The next year was half that again when I went to work for the student organization. The next year, I didn't even get any salary. I got pocket money now and then. And then the next year, I found myself in YWAM where I had to pay to be. So that's the story of my pay rise, and it's been like that for nearly 50 years. So seek God's kingdom first.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on this podcast with us.
You're very welcome.
All right. For everybody listening, thank you.